Let's do it.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show.
Monday through
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Is this thing on? One, two, mic check, one, two. All right.
What up, boy? What up, yeah?
What you know about Ray Meyer, the mad scientist of basketball who saw this clumsy seven-footer and taught him footwork and agility and touch around the basket and how to stand tall on the court, developing this George Mikan fella into a basketball pioneer?
What you know about
jumping Jim Pollard from Oakland, who was touching up top of backboards in the 40s?
What you know about
the clutchness of Sam Jones, the rebellious creativity of Red Auerbach, how Bill Russell organized a camp in Mississippi to help race relations after Medgar Evers was murdered?
What you know about
the origins of the Showtime Lakers being a nightclub in Santa Monica called The Horn? Or how Paul Westhead almost killed the dynasty before it got started?
What you know about
Chuck Daly? About number 8 Kobe? About the Silicon Valley influence on the NBA? In my new book, Dynasties, the 10 GOAT teams that changed the NBA forever, we take a look at the NBA's grand history through the lens of its dominant teams and dominant players. How not only each dynasty was built on the previous one, but how these legendary basketball teams even impacted society almost as much as the game. With popping illustrations from Yu Ming Kwan, Dynasties is a gorgeous addition to your bookshelf or your coffee table.
It is the perfect collector's item,
both for NBA fans who want to journey through history and casual fans who want to learn more about this league they can't get enough of. Get your copy of Dynasties today at Amazon, Barnes & Noble's, Target, Walmart, or wherever you buy books.
What you know about
Dynasties, the 10 GOAT teams that changed the NBA forever, wherever you buy books.
Kobe, what do you think of when you watch Steph Curry?
I see a calmness about him. I see a calmness about him, and I think it's something that a lot of players don't understand. I think the fans, it's very hard for the fans to really understand what I'm saying, because most players don't get it. There's a serious calmness about him, which is extremely deadly, right? Because he's not up, he's not down, he's not contemplating what just happened before or worrying about what's to come next. He's just there. And when a player has the skills and has trained himself to have the skills to be able to shoot, dribble, left, right, etc., and then you mix that with this calmness and poise, then you have a serious, serious problem in your hands. And so when I watch him play, that's what I see.
Let's bring DA into the conversation here.
Welcome to Hoop.
Comma is
adjacent on the Athletic Podcast Network.
I turned it on and I heard Shaq with the barbs, like the bullshit and braggadocio. I was transported right back into it. I was like, oh, this is great.
I think I rap better than Shaq.
David Aldridge.
Oh, he's totally playing. Yes. Yes. And then he got their lungs out in front of everybody on TV.
Michael was not your friend.
It was popping in there.
And Marcus Thompson.
I just can't get with this idea of taking 1 hour of content and finding the morsel that might pop
and blowing at him.
Hoops adjacent.
Welcome to Hoop
5-4. We have ignition.
Stay mellow, my friends.
The comma is. And welcome. It's another edition of Hoops Adjacent on the Athletic NBA Show. I'm David Aldridge here in D.C. Sunny and warm. It's too warm here in D.C. It's like 75, but it's muggy. I don't like this. It's October. It's not supposed to be muggy. In the Bay is our man, Marcus Thompson. Marcus, what's up?
Yo, it's hella hot.
How hot?
It was like 89 yesterday.
Oh, that's too hot.
And
today, that's too damn hot.
I took my daughter to school and it was hot. I'm like, yo, why is it? I don't know what's happening in the Bay, but it's October and it's feeling like July. So we in this thing. We out here. We still got shorts and t-shirts. That's what we do.
Thunderstorms in LA and whatnot last night. That was ridiculous. Delayed the game.
West side till we die.
Well, let's get our guest in. As you know, on Hoops Adjacent, we like to try to get all of the big NBA names on the show. And we have on occasion gotten a couple here and there over the years. This is a good one. Say hi, Steph Curry.
What's happening, fellas? It's hotter down here in the peninsula of the Bay. Although I'm only seeing the inside of gyms now, so don't really matter.
What's it like?
You know the microclimates out here. You know, it's like
20. I thought you was by the water, so it's cooler. It'd be hella cold over there.
I ain't like that. I gotta be close to Chase, man.
I got you. All right. So what's the? So this is a good place to start off. What is the commute time for you on a normal game day?
Normal game day is about 40 minutes. So if I put the podcast on like 1.5 speed, I can probably get through one episode in the car.
There you go. Like it. Like it.
Are you still like taking the daughters to school, and are you still allowed getting to do that type of stuff?
Yeah, it depends on the schedule. I got to do it this morning. Take my son preschool. He loves, like, he just loves school. He's a socialite of the family. So it's a big deal, the drop offs for him, because you need that like little one-on-one time with him. Because when you get to the front of the school, it's over. Like you're basically invisible at that point. It's all about his friends, his teachers and all that. And then fortunately our two oldest, they're homeschooled. So we walk them to the backyard. That could be times a little easier.
There you go. The recess works out better, much better, I would think.
Absolutely.
I'm cool on that homeschool. I was dying during the pandemic.
We talked about like this. Yes.
The eighth grade teacher.
You were looking into the homeschooling thing. This was a potential topic, right?
Yeah. To Marcus's point, though, this was the one learning was it was not going to be me or my wife doing the teaching.
Right.
Yeah. I was a second grade distance learning overseer, and I was not there.
So hold on, you weren't killing that physical science? You wasn't rocking out there?
Nothing. I didn't get any high approval ratings. I know they have all these.
Nothing. Apps. I don't rate my teacher. Nothing. Nothing good.
We didn't have that back in the day. I would not have been top of any list, according to my seven-year-old daughter. So.
You know what's insulting, Steph? Like, I would be working with my daughter with math, right? And it was like, you know, it was torture, right? For both of us. She hated me doing it. I was miserable. I didn't understand. I was explaining it perfectly and she didn't understand. And then she sat down with a tutor and they're like dancing and singing and she's like knocking it out. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, yo, I don't even understand. Do you only learn when it costs me? Yo, is that the lesson here?
There's something to that. We might need to do another deep dive on that.
First. Oh, Lord. Man, well, my youngest son, I should say, of our two boys, finally, after 12 years of private school, it finally got into the public school. Boy, I was dancing like you would not believe. Oh, my God. I don't have to pay for his education. It's
like, everything you're saying is exactly right. And not only that, just to know that, like, the respect of the teachers and what they do to... I don't know what the secret sauce is. I feel like we're all talking the same language and we just can't get it done. As I don't know what it is.
Well, we know our kids too well. We know our kids too well. And so they know us.
Yeah.
Right. You know what I'm saying? So they'll do what irks us. We'll do what irks them. And there's no learning. So leave it to the professionals is the moral of the story. And we will do that going forward. Speaking of professionals, you are a professional shooter and you know what the rules changes are. And I saw you commenting on those the other night.
Now, and he got caught last night in the preseason game.
I got that. Now, that one, I don't, not your particular call. I mean, the fake jump into the guy, I think that's terrible. It should not be part of the game. The one that I have a little problem with is the CP, as everybody knows. Which is you penetrate, you let the guy behind you run into you, and then it's a foul. I think that's a foul. And they seem to be wanting to try to get rid of that one, too. So what are your thoughts on these rules changes?
Yeah, I knew there was going to be kind of a shock factor to it. There's going to be some confusion, possibly frustration from the player's perspective, because you're so used to certain reads and that muscle memory takes over. To your point, I never truly liked it. I knew you could use it to your advantage, especially if, you know, you're in a one-on-one situation, you get a guy going, you know, kind of retreating and you step back and then they're out of control. You use that to your advantage to get a foul call. I still believe that's a foul too. Like last night, you know, the game in Portland, I leaned forward a lot and that's kind of a judgment call in terms of, is the defender truly stopping and still in legal guarding position,
right,
or am I the one, you know, truly initiating the contact? Like, there's going to be that gray area there. Obviously, I lost that conversation. But the other ones were, you know, as an offensive player, like if you create the advantage, then I feel like you should be able to use that, you know, no matter what, especially like a one-on-one situation where if I get by somebody and then they're out of control, they run into me, I should be able to take advantage of that. The one, like it's in transition and open space and you're just seeking contact, like there's no place in the game for that. You know, me probably, I don't know, Luka, James, Trey are the ones that everybody wants to talk about. For better or for worse, there's going to be a learning curve, and we all understand that, and we've all adjusted to rule changes in the past. It's just a matter of hopefully it's consistent. That's the biggest thing that we need, you know, from a refereeing standpoint across the board. I don't care what you call, as long as you're consistent with it, we'll make the adjustments, and the game won't suffer, or my game won't suffer from it at all.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers? That's the butterfly effect for real.
I remember, especially early in your career, the big thing was people wanted you to draw fouls more. And you were like, nah, man, that's not how we play. Like, how did you go from that to this? What was the process of you saying, all right, if this is how we're going to play, I might as well do it? Because you were pretty adamant about not falling for that, you know, not participating in that element of the game.
Well, I still feel that way. And the one that I do for sure is obviously the pump fake, and then you kind of, you know, look for contact if somebody leaves their feet. Like, that's, I feel like that's been a part of the game for a while, not just my generation. So it's not like we invented it or created it. But the other parts where, you know, you just forget about what the goal of the game is and just putting the ball in the basket, I still, you know, have a pretty strong point of view on that part of the game, where even like the sweep through, or, you know, trying to, you know, sell contact, or, you know, using your off arm to engage and all that type of stuff. I've never been good at it. So it's something that, you know, I never really took time to learn or to try. And part of that is maybe I don't get as many calls as I probably should or could, but, you know, obviously you try to stay efficient and effective. So you got enough to worry about already in terms of how defensive, you know, defenses are strategizing against you and where your shots are going to come from and all that. I kind of chose not to add another element to kind of bog my mind down a little bit.
Let's flip it a little bit. So do you think this will affect you defensively?
That's a good question. I mean, again, it's just about the consistency of the calls. Like, that's why hopefully these preseason games will expose as many of those situations as possible, so that we all can get as many examples to learn from. And then hopefully that creates a pattern of how the game's going to be called going into the regular season. So maybe you can be a little bit more aggressive defensively, knowing, you know, if you maintain your space and your position, the offensive guy can't, you know, use that to their advantage. You know, we'll see how that affects, you know, scoring and free throws and foul calls and all that, all the advanced analytics gurus that are going to break that down as the season goes on. But, you know, again, it's just about being consistent. That's with anything. So I think that's why I like playoff basketball so much, because you get to that point, mm-hmm. a lot of this kind of ticky-tack stuff and the nuances of drawing fouls kind of get eliminated a little bit more, you know, in the playoffs. And hopefully that'll be the vibe throughout the regular season.
I'm curious, out of all the times in a game you're fouled, what percentage would you say are called?
About 45%.
Oh, that's higher than what I thought you would have said.
You were trying to get that 30 out and you couldn't get it out, right?
I was playing the Price is Right, trying to, you know, hedge my bet.
So if I say $1, I win, right?
Exactly, man. So
I thought he would say higher, DA, higher, 45. Higher.
I think Warriors fans would say 15, right. 20.
6.3% of the time it gets fouled, it gets called. I mean, look, there's a lot to talk about with the team. Steve made an interesting point last night when somebody asked him about the two first-round picks, and he said, hey, they're young guys, there's guys in front of them. There's so much to ask you about the squad that you have going into this season. I just wonder, what do you know that you can count on going into this season?
Our veteran presence, obviously. It's great having Andre back. It's great the way Draymond's looked in training camp so far. Obviously, anticipation of Clay, returning from his injury. We have a strong core and DNA of how we do things that, we rely on and have relied on for years now. What I've seen early in camp is there's a commitment to just our style and, moving the ball, that offense by committee where everybody's, cutting, screening for each other. We obviously know you get scouted and, fourth quarters come, things kind of slow down. You have to get to your bread and butter offense, but we have a lot of shooting that we, necessarily didn't have the last couple of years. Being able to create space and create room on the floor with that shooting, I feel like, will help us a lot this year offensively. Jordan Poole has been just a superstar in terms of, taking advantage of his opportunity to continue to get better, the work he puts in, and obviously showing that early. And he has a prime opportunity to be a spark plug for us all year long. So what Warriors basketball is and how, you've seen us play for years on end, it'll be another evolution of that. And hopefully the spacing and the shooting threats that we have will open up a lot more opportunities and options across the board. And then when Clay gets back, it's just a matter of figuring out what our rotation is and understanding he's going to take us to another level. So
yeah,
we almost got like three seasons in one. It's like the anticipation for Clay coming back. Whenever he does come back, that first maybe month or 6 weeks where you figure out, what he looks like and get his legs underneath him. And then you have the playoff push that, we're kind of breaking it up into those segments. And hopefully we take care of our business.
Yeah. From your standpoint, I guess I would think it doesn't even merely matter where you are, like in the playoffs. If it's, you'd rather be one than eight, I know. But if you're eight, so be it, right? I mean,
you always want home court advantage. History says that definitely sets you up for a better chance to make a deep run. But to your point, especially how last year, when we felt like even last year, if we had got one of those two play-in games, we would have been a tough out in a seven-game series because we've been before we had the experience. So hopefully we can, Siri's over here talking to me. we can get into the playoffs and with home court advantage and understand who we are and our identity is. It hasn't been proven that, we're an easy out in any playoff series. So that's what we're banking on.
Steph, I had a player tell me once that low key, you were the most gangster player in the league, right? Like how there's a, I know you're a nice guy and you play golf and all that stuff and you have children.
I golf like the play golf.
It's golf. Very
I'm just
friendly.
Bad at it.
It's very friendly and fun.
Damn, Marcus.
I just be wondering sometimes what's in your head. Like there's this complete kind of other side of you that even on the court you're like you're smiling a lot, you're playing, but like you are quote unquote the babyface assassin. What are you telling yourself in your head when it's time to get going, like this summer for instance, when reportedly you guys were out here trying to get some help and it ends up being not that much and it's like, okay, basically it's on you again, right? You gotta at least carry until Clay gets there. In your head, what does Steph tell himself to get ready, to put in the work, and to like be able to carry this load?
There's two parts to that. One is, I've always had that kind of quiet killer instinct, and it's something that, Kobe did an interview one time. It was one of my favorite kind of comments about me in terms of how he saw like that killer instinct behind the smile. And just, I can have fun and have joy. He was like, I'm out there to rip your heart out. And it's just a different way that it looks.
Kobe, what do you think of when you watch Steph Curry?
I see a calmness about him. I see a calmness about him. And I think it's something that a lot of players don't understand. I think the fans, it's very hard for the fans to really understand what I'm saying, because most players don't get it.
So there's a confidence, no matter what situation you are, that I have the ability and the skill set to, you know, win any game, any night. You know, that's something that is only built on the shoulders of the work that you put in. Not to be cliche, but like, that's really, you know, how I gain that confidence and maintain that from year after year. And the second part is there's always like this quiet insecurity at the same time of when you come into a training camp that you got to prove it all over again. And there's something to that. You know, I get nervous right before training camp starts. You know, there's this, I call it an insecurity throughout your summer workouts where like, I really have to be intentional about what I'm doing, what I'm working on, what my mentals are like going into the season, because, you know, there's no guarantee that what I've done before is just going to show up. And so I have a fine balance between those two emotions. And it's always like a back and forth game, because I know if I step on the floor, I got this confidence, but it's built on the work. But if I don't have the insecurity about what the work means for what I'm doing on the court, then it doesn't work. So that's really my way of thinking and way of summarizing, you know, all the different emotions. You can't control what people say about, you know, you or your team or whatever the case is. And, you know, we all know year to year, you're in different situations and you have to be able to adapt. But me personally, those are the two kind of emotions that I have to balance, you know, every single year to try to stay on this level.
So is the voice in your head, like, what is it like? Is it like, are you in front of a man in front of you? And are you like, man, you garbage. You can't guard me. Like, is he like going off? What does he sound like? You know,
there's something to that. I might have to put the voice memo.
Like, if you were to narrate this, who would you get to narrate the voice of the killer inside?
Kevin Hart would be like the insecure side of like, you ain't nothing. You ain't nothing.
Really trying to get big, man. I'm serious about the gym. You know something else I thought the gym was going to do for me, though? I thought the gym was going to help me mentally. I had a lot of mental stuff I was trying to get over. Phobias and stuff. And I said, you know, you get a little bigger, feel better about yourself, you don't worry about the stuff you're afraid of. Got any phobias? Not that you can think of? You ain't scared of nothing, huh? You ever wake up and an alligator in your room or some shit?
You like just ragging on you the whole time? You're like, It probably would be Kobe's voice on the other side of like that killer instinct, you know, that you're ready for pretty much any situation, knowing that, like, knowing who you are. So that's might be an animation coming up for that.
But there's a serious calmness about him, which is extremely deadly, right? Because he's not up, he's not down, he's not.
So what was what did you and Brandon work on during the offseason? What would you and your group kind of put in your bag that maybe wasn't there before? What did you try to refine or strengthen that was there before?
Yeah, at this point, I mean, understanding my physical stature, still 6'3", still a 190. There's not much to add in terms of how I do things. It's all about just being as efficient as possible with how I move, how the ball moves, and where I'm getting my shots at. So I'd say I just try to do everything I've been doing even better. And that's always been the kind of approach, you know, to the work that I do over the summer. And then a lot of it is the mental work, for sure, to kind of Marcus's earlier point, just around trying to anticipate what the season will look like based on, you know, the team and you know, the style of play that you want to kind of bring to life. And for me, it's always conditioning. That's the biggest thing. Like, I have to, you know, as you get a little older and older in this league, that's the hardest thing to maintain throughout the summer. So you have to work a little bit smarter every year, especially the way that I play, because I cover ground on the court, and it is my superpower out there to be able to just outrun guys, you know, night after night. So that is that's the unlock for me pretty much every year is how can I elevate that part of my game as I get older.
DA, I'm going to be so proud when this commercial drop where there's like a voice personifying the gangster inside. We're going to know that this began on Hoops Adjacent, right?
Exactly.
AP credits on that for sure.
I'm thinking Michael B. Jordan as the soothing voice, as the voice that tells you. Michael B. Jordan as Adonis Creed, not as himself. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Or as Killmonger. Either one would work for me. I mean, I think they're both very confident people for different reasons.
Killmonger, I like that. That might be a better one. He's just got a firmness to his voice. Yeah. I like that. All right.
Now, I always have said this. I've said this since Black Panther came out. I think Killmonger had a point. I'll just leave it at that. I think Killmonger had a point. What do you think?
You mean at the end when he didn't want to?
His point of view as he came into Wakanda, not about him becoming king, but just about life and what has to happen after he becomes king. I think he had a point. Now, you could disagree with the point, but I think he had a point.
Yo, DA about to start a race riot right here.
You still get some flames. I don't know. I don't know how you summarize the point. I'm going to plead the fifth one right now.
We'll be like, yeah, I kind of think we should kind of use our weapons to kill all the oppressors. I feel like
DA out here. All right, DA. I understood his point of view. That's all I'm saying. I understood his point of view.
Man, we got to obliterate the colonizers. All right, DA, I'm with you, man. DC, baby.
This is a debate point, and the Wakandans had their point of view, and their point of view was just as valid. I thought it was an interesting discussion.
You did your job. That is why you are who you are. That's why you're Hall of Famer right there.
No, I don't know about all that.
What's Hall of Fame is how Steph was like, yeah, I'm cool.
I love that. Facts. I love it. Man, I love it.
Mike, appreciate you sitting down with me. This is really an honor, one, because of who you are, but more than that, we're obviously here on a golf course, and it's a pretty special bond in terms of the basketball players who love golf. That group is growing by the year. There's a lot more people picking up the game, but you've been in it for a long time.
It's the hardest game.
I'm fascinated just to know.
I can always respond to an opponent, a defensive guy, offensive guy, whatever, but in golf, it's like playing in a mirror. And you're battling yourself consistently to try to get perfection. Every swing, every putt. For a competitive person like me, this is what keeps me sane, because when I walk away from the game of basketball, that was enough to keep my competitive juices working.
Absolutely.
Now, Steph, you're one of us now. You're like you're a media person. You were doing the Ryder Cup. Is that correct?
Yeah. So joined up with NBC Universal and their entire family of networks, and part of the kind of initial launch was to do some content for Golf Channel and go out to the Ryder Cup. So what I didn't know was how deep Michael Jordan was into the Ryder Cup presence and just into the team, into the captains. And I think he had been to the last 11, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And he makes a whole week out of it and shows up for the team and support and all that. And y'all know how much I love golf. So,
yes.
One, it was surreal because who would have ever thought that I'd be in the middle of Sheboygan or Kohler, Wisconsin, talking to Michael Jordan on a golf course about the Ryder Cup? Like all that was just kind of a lot going on. And he was amazing in terms of mentality and what golf has meant to him in his life and from a competitive standpoint, and how much he's, or I guess, influenced within the Ryder Cup team and players and captains who have come through. So I'm hooked. I hope to find a way schedule wise to be there every year, because that team aspect and just that energy was dope. And it was cool to kind of get in that atmosphere right before the season started, because some good energy right there for the Ryder Cup guys.
So did you ask him if you're a Hall of Famer now?
First question, they just edited it out. And he said, first ballot Hall of Fame, no problem.
That's that gangster, DA. That's the.
But did you ask him if he now likes you more than he likes Russ? You know what I'm saying?
We didn't get into that one, though.
Man, I wonder what it was like watching a team, a team that really all new guys basically on the Ryder Cup team this year, whip that ass and just be dominant. And if there was something recognizable about that as you watched it.
I mean, it was just pure dominance, but it was also like a swag and a, sorry, can y'all hear it?
Yeah, that's all right. Hold on, let me get this.
Hold that. I know we can add it. Hold on.
We can. It's either a very powerful child or a very weak man.
I'm about
man.
To be like, yo, Cannon is strong, yo. He hungry.
Hey, I found it on the door. Feed me, daddy. You have very powerful children, Steph.
Yo, is that Cannon?
We got some work going on in these streets out here.
You got you.
I thought Cannon was trying to get in the fridge.
Exactly. Like, I need some more cereal. That's all right.
Can y'all hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
All right, so you were talking about domination at the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, it was just a swag and a togetherness that, you know, I hadn't seen in the golf world. And I say that meaning, you know, they're walking on the first tee and you see all the atmosphere of the fans and just the chaos that is the first tee of the Ryder Cup. Every USA guy that came out was like hyping the crowd up, whether they had this demeanor normally or not. They hyped the crowd up, you know, playing to this side, that side, showing off when they pulled driver out. Bryson DeChambeau's holding it up like it's a freaking Lancelot sword. Like, he's just all over the place. And to see that kind of galvanizing the spirit and belief even before, the first tee was hit, the first tee shot was hit, it was like they knew that they were meant to win and meant to turn the tide because they hadn't had success in a long time. But they had to spark their own belief, and it was cool to watch every single guy, especially, you know, there's a lot of drama leading up to this group getting together because a lot of side stories and backstories and stuff, and they all kind of put it to the side. And that's what any great team does. It was awesome to kind of see it up close and personal, see them get it done.
Speaking of, teams that have a lot of drama.
It was an amazing segue. Right?
I was going to say, that was a very good segue, Mark.
You're right. And you're like, hold on. What is he about to do?
I was turning my hands. Like, you try to answer the question before it's even asked. I didn't know where he was going. All right, now I still don't know where you're going. Where are we going? Let's go.
I'm curious, too.
I was mostly just trying to scare you with the setup. I wanted to ask you about, you know, the 75th anniversary.
Oh.
Like, knowing the NBA is into 75. And I think there's a book that just came out about the dynasties in the
great
NBA.
Teams, yeah. It's a pre-order. I think you can get it now.
Yeah. It came out today, so you can order it. It features you prominently in there.
Really?
But I was wondering, like, when you were, how much did you study or look into, like, the old hoop, like, you know, back in the day? I know you grew up in it, like, in the 90s, but how much did you pay attention to beforehand? Did you watch old film? Like, now that the NBA is looking at kind of the whole 75 years, my personal take is we don't respect the OGs enough.
Nope.
Like, we don't talk about them enough. But I was wondering, like, how far do you go back when you was watching and growing up on hoop?
See, you're a defender of the old generation, an old era of basketball, and we just came out of that little period of time, especially when we were coming up, that there was a lot of hate thrown at us in terms of guys that were taking the reins and pushing the envelope.
Was there any specific?
I don't remember the specifics. I just remember I got asked about it a lot.
See, take my bait, D.A.
He knows you too well.
Marcus. But what happens is, yeah, I know MT, but what I do know is I've always been an admirer and respectful and appreciative of the past generation, because we're not doing what we're doing without, you know, the work of their careers. And so, like, I'm never in that situation to your point of when I looked at the NBA's top 50 that they came out with before
96, yep.
You look at some of those names, and then you start to put them in their eras, it's amazing some of the names that pop off. And then they ask, like, we're going to add 25, and you think about, you know, the greats of the last 25 years. Then there's that conversation, oh, can you add this guy? And he's better than a guy that made the top 50. Should you remove him off that list? And all those different conversations come up. And it's just it's a hard conversation because, you know, without a vision of how the game is supposed to play, guys are just creating it on their own, in their own way, in their own era, and pushing the envelope. And so the same way we're doing, the same way the next generation is going to do it. And that's the beauty of sports in general, but of course of the NBA in such a, you know, 75 years isn't really that long in the grand scheme of life. And so it's pretty awesome to think, you know, how far the game has come that we can actually have these conversations. But I've always been just a hoop head in terms of, you know, if you look back at how the game was played back in the day, you know, there was some talent that just jumped off the screen, and yep. It's undeniable. Could they play in our era? Would we go back and dominate in their era? Who knows? But, you know, that conversation is dope. Just know how much, you know, many strides the NBA has taken in the last 75 years.
What you know about dynasties, the 10 GOAT teams that changed the NBA forever?
Wherever you buy books.
Great players play in any era, Steph. Ali could box in any era. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter what era it was. He was so good.
They would have figured it out.
He would have figured it out. Exactly. Yeah. And great players, you would have been fine. And I'm not, this is not ass kissing. You would have been fine in the 80s because you would have figured out how to play in a more
It's ridiculous. In a more Mark Price league. Played in the 80s. You're telling me? Like, it wasn't like nobody was like, what are you talking about?
Mark Price invented the splitting the double team. Like, he invented that.
Nice.
You know what I mean? So of course he could have played in that era, and of course Michael Jordan could play in this era. What are you talking about? Like, great players play in any era.
In defense of the old heads, I think they were coming at y'all because people did forget about
him.
Not
love.
Like y'all specifically, not you, but I do think there was a generation of basketball where we just forgot about them. Yeah. And especially as the money started trickling in, like, I'd have been a little bitter too. But
I understand that part for sure.
I don't think that was fair to, like, y'all, to, like, for the direct and vehement criticism, but I do think it spurs from them trying to defend, like, yo, like, you know, I was night. People don't know how good Connie Hawkins was, right. Man. Well, like, they don't know. People don't know how good Dr. J was.
Right.
Like, and Spencer Haywood. I do feel like that was the backlash you received. I do feel like part of it is because, you know, it's been 35 years of wanting. And
all great points. And part of it is, you know, I'm sure the money is one of the bigger points too, because like I said, I was an appreciation of where the league is from a business perspective and everybody that had a part in playing in that growth, that, you know, we're reaping the benefits right now, not just the players and what we're making, but just from a fan perspective and the engagement and the access to the game around the world. So like, definitely, I can see the, where if you feel slighted in that respect, you don't feel like you're getting your flowers for what, you know, what you did to push the game forward, what, you know, how nice you were in your career. You could probably get some people chiming in, chirping in. But, you know, if you go to most of the NBA, you know, locker rooms, we know what we're talking about. So
are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever. And that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Steph, you do a very good job of kind of keeping it in the middle. You know what I mean? Like, you don't get too high or too low, generally speaking. And I wonder how difficult it is to not at least publicly be pissed. Like, I get pissed off all the time. Like, things piss me off, and I say something on Facebook or on Twitter, and then I feel better. But you can't do that. So how do you deal with that on a regular basis?
It's a great question, because part of it is the circle that I have outside of basketball. And I have a certain perspective that, you know, it's that another cliche line of, you know, basketball is what I do. It's not who I am. But when it comes to life, like, I have so much more to it than what happens on the court. And that gives me perspective about the highs and the lows that happen. I don't forget the roots of where I came from and growing up watching my pops play in the league for 16 years and understanding at an early age what that emotional roller coaster was like, because I, you know, I was born in 88. So in his second year in the league, so for 10 to 12 years of his career, like, I remember a good amount of it. And I got to ask questions. I got to, you know, see in real time while y'all lost the playoff series, like, how's he feel? How's he coming home type of vibe? How he treated people when we went to dinner after a loss versus a win, if there was a difference there, how people treated him, like, all those type of things. And so it's the perfect balance of just understanding the perspective of, you know, it is a game. It's important. And it's something that I live and die by in terms of, you know, what I put into it. But I try hard. It's an intentional effort to not let that get the best of me as best I can, because I know how much of an influence how I carry myself has. And it is a big responsibility. And I don't always get it right. Talk to the guy through the mouthpiece set, but, you know, there's always there's always an opportunity to you know, I hate to say inspire, but there's a way to carry myself in a way that I respect, you know, how I see the game and how I see life and how I see my greater purpose, and also enjoy what I do, because Coach Kerr is a great reminder of, at least once a week, he tells us how lucky we are to be playing this game, to get be able to support our families playing this game.
Yeah.
You know, we do have real problems that are real to us and things that we have to work through and real emotions, and we should acknowledge those. But it's all perspective at the end of the day. So that's how I live it.
I imagine, you know, Aisha gets to hear this, you know, the piss side of you, right?
Like, the part, you know, it's funny. Like, if she was sitting right here, she would say she didn't hear it enough. She's always she's always like, when you come on, like, you don't complain about nothing. I'm like, that's funny. Maybe I also complain the same way. Maybe, I don't know.
I always wondered how difficult it would be to hold on to any of this stuff when you're going home to Riley. Like, Riley feels like, yo, like, she will let you know in a heartbeat how much, like, you are her background singer.
Oh, straight up. I came home today from a preseason game. I get home at 2 in the morning, wake up, school. They wake up like 8 o'clock, 7:38. She's old enough now. She asks, oh, Daddy, what happened last night? Like, oh, we played well. It's like, did you win? Yeah, we won. Cool, that's awesome. So I need you to film this iMovie thing right quick. I need you to, and she throw on a whole different side. That's all I get right there. Gotta get it in real quick.
You got it storyboarded and everything.
Got the whole, she got her whole day planned and where we all fit.
She been
in,
like this since she was two.
Where we all fit into that to that operation. So yeah, maybe it's just I don't have enough time to really marinate on basketball when I'm at home, because there's 800 things going on.
All right, I got to ask you about this. Not about your teammate necessarily. Well, if you want to say it, talk about that, that's fine. But there's a very small minority of players that have not gotten vaccinated, don't want to get vaccinated, or if they do, they're doing it reluctantly.
Mm-hmm.
They get enough attention. What I'd like to know is, why aren't the 95% of people who are vaccinated being more vocal about, and you don't even have to talk about the people that aren't getting vaccinated. I know you do it. I know assorted people do PSAs, but collectively, you've talked to Fauci, like literally talked to Fauci. So you could, if a group of high profile, for lack of a better term, NBA stars did a bunch of PSAs that ran all the time saying, get your shot already, what are you doing? That could have an effect too. And I just wonder what you think about that.
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's one that it amplifies or puts a spotlight on the fact that we all come from somewhere and we're all kind of, you know, products of our environment in terms of, you know, just how we see the world and how we operate and where you fit certain, you know, conversations in terms of, you know, social justice, public health, things that involve just sports. And as players, like to your point, we've been very vocal and outspoken on a lot of different things, especially, you know, in the last couple of years around, you know, racial justice and police brutality and things that are impacting our societies, our communities. We understand COVID falls into that category for sure. But it's been one within the NBA circles that has always been a little confusing, I would say, for the general collective to truly understand how it's affecting each one of us in real time. And I think that started back in February, March of 2020, and it's continued to go because there's a nuance to, you know, the data and the research. It's all a narrative war, I think, in the sense of it's been politicized and all that, but it's been hard to crack that seal of, you know, what your first impression of it was. I think that's the biggest thing. And to your point around, you know, the vaccine and how it's affecting us now, there's guys that did it for certain reasons back in, you know, February, March, April of last year. There's guys that have just done it because they don't want to miss time, or there's guys that really understand the public health aspect of it. There's a lot of different reasons that we've gotten to 95% or so of the league. But the other 5%, I think it's truly just trying to crack, you know, the confusion, the uncertainty, and the hesitancy that was breeded at the very beginning. Unfortunately, that's a slower process. To your point around why people can't speak, because there's a huge locker room aspect to it. And that's for better or for worse. It's a part of sports. It's a part of,
right,
you know, just protecting each other in that respect. And I understand that that's going to sound like we're not prioritizing the broader problem here. But I think slowly you're seeing more guys be a little bit more outspoken, a little bit more direct about, you know, how they're approaching it and how they're sharing their point of views. Yeah. And I hope that, you know, sooner than later, we will be the next league at 100%. And, you know, it'll be a good case study at the end of the day of how we got there.
How did you guys receive Andrew Wiggins? Like, you know, he didn't want to do it and then he did it. And he, you know, he's going to be available to now. How does that locker room view what he, I guess, essentially sacrificed for the team?
I mean, it was big. We understand that there was something, in terms of how he saw things and how he believed that it took a while till last week for him to get vaccinated. But I think the biggest thing is I wouldn't have looked at him any differently in terms of him as a human being had he decided, you know, this is not what I want to do. I'm going to miss games and all that. I would have been a little disappointed, but it's not that I would see him any differently as a human being and how I've come to know him, you know, especially over the last 2 years. Thankfully, he did his part. He got outside of his comfort zone and asked the right questions, got the right information, and understood the ramifications for, you know, what was at stake, and got it done. And now he'll be available. And I think that's one part of it. But he also is a true testament to the greater good of what we're all talking about, how everybody we feel should kind of handle this situation when it comes to making that decision to get it done. So I'm excited he's going to be around. I'm excited
that, you know, he made that decision and that he's going to be available for us.
I am fascinated that this violates the code. I am fascinated by this because you know the questions that violate the code, right? I know them. You know them. We all know them. This is not anything like those. You know what I mean? Like, this is not anything like those. And yet it obviously, to your point, is viewed as violating the code, the player code.
I feel like I can only speak for myself in this situation. I talked about it at media day, especially around Wiggs' situation. I was very direct and clear about, I got it. I felt like it was the right thing to do for everybody, knowing it was safe, knowing I had asked the right people. There was still a sense of urgency on Wiggs and figuring out how he, you know, when he needed to be vaccinated by it to be available for the season and all that. But there was still, the ball was in his court. And so it wasn't, a time to put like an ultimatum on him or anything like that respect. So it's a hard conversation to have. And that's only speaking for myself. There's, like you said, there's a lot of other guys around the league with a lot of different microphones and platforms, and they're going to handle it, you know, the way that they see fit. I enjoyed the process of, you know, like you said, reaching out to Fauci, had two conversations with him and put those on full blast so that, you know, they were hopefully seen by a lot of people and sharing the right information. But, you know, it is a collective effort, and, you know, 95% is solid. It's not 100. We hope to get 100 pretty soon.
But before I let you go, Steph, I got to ask you this, because, You were talking before about, you know, how the criticism you got, and it was a lot. Like, I think we've gotten a little bit past it, but 15, 16, 17 was kind of wild. But one of the great praises you got was from a player who's like emotionally my favorite, right? Like, Allen Iverson has always been like a rider for you. I just wanted to know, what did that feel like? What does he mean to you? What does his game mean to you? Because to me, like, Allen Iverson is my heart. You know what I'm saying? So when that guy says it means a lot.
Yeah, AI and Shaq have been the two guys that I grew up watching that have shown so much love. And they go out of their way to do it too. That's the part that I love the most. Like, you know, they know, and I feel like they know based on how, some of the things they said and you know, the impact that they've had on this generation of basketball player. Like, that's who we watched growing up, you know, AI with his flair, his confidence, you know, his uniqueness. He represented culture on the basketball court and off. He was unashamed and unapologetic about who he was, even when the rules were almost set up for him to fail in the sense of how he ran his life. So, you know, you want to make sure that he is celebrated. And I know this generation of player definitely is probably unanimous how much of an impact AI had in some way, shape, or form on their game or their interest.
He
in
had
basketball.
You with cornrows at Charlotte Christian.
I ain't have that right hairstyle material. I ain't have it right. So, but I love to try and imitate the moves. And I did wear the accessories though. He did have me on the accessory game. So, okay.
The armband?
Oh yeah, armband.
Finger sleeve.
Armband right below the elbow, finger sleeve. Maybe the headband if you want to throw that on every once in a while.
That's hella funny. Picture you at Charlotte Christian.
I'm gonna find a picture.
Who wore it better?
Yeah, exactly. To know that, like, he's been retired for a while and he still watches the game and appreciates the way that you play and you know, put you in his top whatever list, like, that means a lot. And that's the part, like, from a colleague perspective, it's interesting. It's gonna be wild to, like, know who I'm rubbing shoulders with, like Dame and LeBron and, you know, Kawhi and CP and all the guys that you've just competed against year after year after year. When it's all said and done, it's gonna be such an appreciation of what we accomplished and the wars that we had on the floor and all of that. And hearing AI and Shaq talk about it, it makes me appreciate what's happening right now, because I know like this is special and there's so much talent out here trying to, you know, trying to win championships and do amazing things out there on the floor. Like, I mean, we're in that group, so it's dope.
You my top five all day long.
That's
Jack.
Crazy, bro.
And I remember when you was a baby when I was trying to get your daddy.
I know.
So I know what time it is.
I don't know.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Best, man.
You look great, too, man.
Thank you.
You hold it. Hold
if
it
you
down.
Staged that interaction, you a genius. Remember when he hugged you and was like top five and somehow it got caught on the mic? If you somehow staged
all-star,
that,
all-star, all-star weekend, like I was slowly,
you was like, hey, my mic on.
Moved my way over that, yeah. Yeah, it makes it. It was just thing on. One, two, check, one, two. All right. What up, boy? What up, yeah?
Genius. Genius.
Always a step ahead. Man, Steph, thank you for your time, brother. I know you are busy. As the season gets started, man, I wish you safe passage, safe health, safe journey, man, as you get to do this again, man, and try to get another chip, man. Thank you.
Absolutely.
For your time.
I appreciate y'all, and see y'all soon. Hopefully in person.
Love them kids, man. Yes. Keep loving them kids. I don't care about that hoop stuff. I care about the dad.
Yeah, me
that's
too.
Who matters, the dad.
All day. I got two hours before care about the hoop, soccer practice and dance class and school pickup. So it's about to go. That'd be go time.
There you go.
Do your thing, boy.
All right, man.
Appreciate you.
Appreciate
yeah,
you,
absolutely.
Man.
See y'all
all
soon.
Right, so this was a decent show, Marcus, I think. One of our more decent shows today, I think. I think
we did all right.
So as always, leave that 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, wherever you hear this podcast. And look, we just had Steph Curry on the show.
For an hour.
If you leave less than 5 stars on this review, I'm going to personally come slap you. That's all. That's the David Aldridge guarantee. I will slap you if you leave less than 5 stars on the review. Just
dang,
don't do
man.
It.
First you trying to annihilate the colonizer, and now you out here slapping people. Can you at least put some baby powder on your hands? Can you at least go, you know, with the baby
all
powder?
Right, like, all right, let me temper that, Marcus. What should people do if they want to leave less than a 5-star review?
I mean, forget keep it to yourself. I want DA to slap you now. Like, if you give
Marcus
less than a 5-star
violence.
Review, if you give less than a 5-star review, DA is gonna show up with a 1970 suit on with a butterfly
exactly.
collar
exactly.
and a handful of baby powder,
exactly.
and he gonna slap you.
Pop, pop. That's what I'm gonna say.
A lot of players don't.